go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 104 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. If you were born or raised or lived in Connecticut during the 1990s and early 2000s, when you hear the number 104, you instinctively think of a radio 104.1 FM. That is, yes, to be man, I used to listen to FM radio, and I still do. Back in the early 2000s, Radio 104 was an epic station. I'd go to, they'd have an all-day concert at the Meadows in Harford County. If you know what that is, you know what that is. And yeah, we used to drink in a parking lot, and then there'd always be this idea, should we go in or should we stay in a parking lot? Because, of course, we were underage in high school at the time. So once we went in to the amphitheater, that's what this the Meadows was, we could no longer drink because we didn't have fake IDs. But if we had stayed in the parking lot, you can party, do beer bongs, and play all the drinking games. So there was always, but we loved the music because Radio 104, alternative rock, legendary, epic. And I believe one year it might have been Papa Roach was the band that got me to go in early. I went in before noon, so I sobered up. But I do Papa Roach, what a band! The lead singer, he sang some song, that famous one, and he had the cord from the microphone and he wrapped it around his neck and did this kind of noose thing. I don't know, I dug it. I gotta stop saying, I still listen to FM alternative rock stations whenever I could find them on the radio. Yes, I know I might be the only person who does that. I do have one complaint, though, with alternative rock FM radio, and it is that they never play Limp Bizkit. Now, to me, Limp Bizkit is the best alternative rock band of all time. Nookie, Break Stuff, the guitar bass player with the face paint, and you have Fred Durst with the red Yankee hat backwards with the khaki pants that were baggy, and he was flogging Christina Aguilera. When I say flogging, I mean, you know, getting it in with Christina Aguilera, Woodstock 99. They were the top of the mountain with alternative rock rap of the early 2000s. And the fact that none of these alternative rock stations today will play Limp Bizkit is a disgrace to all alternative rock. Like, if you're going to play Korn, you best be playing, backing it up with Limp Bizkit. They should have a song played once every 90 minutes on any of those stations. And that is why, even though I listen to FM radio sometimes, why I don't listen to it very often, because they don't play Limp Bizkit very often. All right, enough off my high horse there. Now, now thinking of 104, Radio 104, it's very nostalgic to me. And if you grew up in Connecticut during the 90s, it probably brings up a lot of the same feelings. It makes me want to watch Empire Records, maybe even Airheads with a skinny Brendan Fraser, that type of film, the radio station. It gives me good feels. But we can't do that till after this episode, because this is Verbal Graffiti. And I got some more info that I got to tell you all, and I am fired up. Nay, 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 I am lavaed up. Lava is hotter than fire, I believe. I really don't know anything about science, but I think that is the case. So yeah, I am lavaed up. Actually, you know what? I got a letter. Is there anything? Well, I'm bouncing all over the place today or tonight. Is there anything more insipid in America than being a W-2 employee? I got my tax form today, and there's nothing, nothing more depressing than opening up that tax form and seeing the W-2 on the top left-hand corner. It lets you know. It's just spitting in your face, letting you know that you are trapped in the system, that you are working for the man, that the only thing that you can look forward to in life is perhaps a 5% raise after your annual review, maybe a quarterly bonus. The B-man, I don't get any bonuses. But yeah, I implore all of you, if you are a W-2 employee, which I have been since I have been 16, do whatever you can to get away from the W-2. If you're a babe, if you're a baddie, and you're out there, and you're cheating on your boyfriend, and you're at the bar, the restaurant, the concert, and some chad comes up to you, instead of asking him, hey, what do you do for a living? Ask him, ask that chad, are you a W-2 employee? And if he is, run. Run from him, because that is a life that will be rudderless if you get locked with him. It's depressing. There's nothing inspiring about being a W-2 employee. You'll never make more than, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. I do have this theory that the most interesting people in life are those who make under $50,000 and those who make over $500,000. Anywhere in between, those are the boring people, of which I am one. $50,000 to $500,000, those are people who just, they did it, they used the system, right? They went to high school, college, the master's degree, the right internship, the right firm, the right project, whatever, building. And now they live a safe life. People under $50,000, not so safe. People over $500,000, they inspired for more. They took a bit more risk. Those are the people, if you want to have interesting, vibrant conversations, those are the two spectrums you'll want to be interacting with. And I'm striving with this project to get out of that W-2. Oh, there's no more. There's no more. I won't say painful, but there's no more blatant kick in the nuts than opening up your tax form and seeing a W-2. And those the list with the 20, it's a 1 through 20, and it's a, you know, all the numbers and how many taxes and how much you made this year and what your number, the government number is, and how much you paid in Social Security. And it's just every, it reminds me of playing... What was that? Donkey Kong? You know, the old Donkey Kong from Atari, where you go up each level and then you get knocked down and then that is reading through your W-2 till the very final line where it shows you how much you made after taxes last year. And then you think, oh shit, I paid $3,000 for a camera and how much I'm making this year. That doesn't work out. How did I? Ooh, I need to save some more money. So yeah, just get out of that W-2. If you're on that W-2 raft, jump off the raft and start swimming towards Cuba or the Gulf of America, whatever the fuck we're calling it now. Just get away. Get away. Get that W-2 stink off you. If you're away from it, don't even make eye contact with other people that are W-2. Anytime, everyone who wears a, you know what? I was going to say everybody who is a W-2 employee should have to wear a button that says W-2 on it, but you don't need that. For most people, you can just look at them and go, that person's a W-2, and probably 85% of the time, you will be correct with judging a book by its cover. Now, that's making me depressed, so let's be more uplifting, get back to that lava, and talk about something I found on Reddit. All right, this comes from the subreddit Vent. I am a burden. Well, are you? Let's find out. Why do guys always like my friends, but never me? I'm sitting in a room right now at a guy's apartment while he chats up my friends. They purposely told me to go to bed so they could be alone. I know I'm not skinny anymore and I don't show hair. I know I can be childish, but I want to be lovable. Am I not lovable? Maybe not. Maybe my theory is right. Maybe I am a burden. The only time I was useful in the past was when I was skinny and pretty. She doesn't even have to try, and men flock to her and obsess. I know I shouldn't be jealous, but I am. She's just better than me. I'm a nobody. I love her. She's a great friend. Is she? But I just hate how this happens no matter what. No matter the friend I'm hanging out with, the girls I'm friends with are always more desirable. When they reject them, I'm not even the second option. I'm never even the last. And when I am the last option, it's because they want something. I just want to be desirable. Why have I been dealt the wrong hand no matter what I do? Well, to use an analogy to paint the picture, you are a 7'2 offsuit. You are the fat kid chosen last to play dodgeball during recess. That is okay. But everything you say is accurate. Are you lovable? Absolutely not. Can you be lovable in the future? I do believe that you can. The problem is the environment that you find yourself in is what is holding you back. And I do believe that it is not your fault, although you do need to be a bit more observant and make some changes to your life and those people around you. Now, I must say, if this story is accurate, that you wrote this post while your girlfriend or your friend, you have a girlfriend and a guy, the guy's trying to finger pop your girlfriend. So your girlfriend is telling you to kick bricks, go find a bedroom so that she could get finger popped. That is not a friend. That is not a friend at all. She's very greedy. You should really think about that friendship after tonight. Congrats to your girlfriend. But you, no. You're never going to be a pretty or skinny ever again. Once you gain weight, you usually gain weight, and you admit, yourself admit you're not pretty. So there are several people or parties that we can blame for your predicament. The very first party are your parents. Now, your parents are probably ugly and overweight as well. This is what happens. Two unlovables get together and because nobody else will love them, so they're the only ones who can love each other. And then they decided to procreate, which was a mistake. That is troublesome. They should be penalized for doing so. See, they knew they had unlovable genes. They put those genes together, and that made a unlovable child, which grew up to be you. And now you're in this awkward position where your girlfriend, that who you think is your best friend, wants to get finger popped, but you're kind of cock blocking them. But again, it's not your fault. So the first party to blame is your parents, but there is nothing we can do about that. Your parents are who your parents are. Clearly, they're not going to abort you as an adult that you are. Hopefully, you're an adult. So I can't do anything with that. What I can do is talk about the other party. And the other party is your girlfriend, the one who's about to get finger popped by this Chad in this apartment while you're in the bedroom listening through the wall. She is a devious character in your life. May I even call her to be as strong? Yes, I will be. Yes. Your girlfriend, she is a villain in your life. And you need to open up your eyes and see this. See, your girlfriend, she knows exactly what she's doing. She is your friend. Not because she likes you, but because being friends with you props her up to 2 points. So if she was a soft 6 without you, being with a ugly, unlovable, a fatty, that makes her a soft 8 when she's with you. She's really a 6, but when she's with someone as off-putting and not skinny as you are, that props up her number. So see, strategically, and when I say she, I mean your girlfriend, she strategically goes out to public places, bars, restaurants, frat parties, all these events where there are guys that she wants to hook up with, she brings you along because she knows of the two of you, she is always the one that is going to be chosen first. So all the Chads, all the Johns at the bar are going to come up and hit on her. She knows this. She knows this. So if she likes the guy, she'll chat up that guy and maybe she'll get finger popped later in the evening or early morning from that guy. If she doesn't like the guy, she'll pass it along to you. So you're getting all the recycling goods in this relationship. So you don't want to be in this relationship. And this is, you are not the only one this is happening to. I know many groups of friends where this is the case, where I'm thinking of one specific group. When I was in high school, there was this pretty babe and all her girlfriends were either fat, chubby, or super tall and awkward. So they were kind of the cool group, but she was clearly the hottest of the group. And you know what happened to her? Yeah, she ended up marrying a very tall, athletic guy. They live in a huge house. They have two beautiful children. They may be millionaires at this point. She's in that position because she's kind of the devil, right? She put herself in the position to prop herself up more than she actually is. And you know where all those other friends are? I'm thinking of two of her specific girlfriends, and these are my friends, are people I kind of know. The other two friends are unmarried. They own their own houses, no boyfriends, no husbands. They go on vacation together, as friends, because they don't have lovers, because they fucked up. See, they hung out with the hot girl, so they never got, they maybe the guys would get drunk, so they'd get to fuck a few Chads along the way, but none of these Chads would commit to them. So now they're over 40 years of age, and they're alone, while the pretty friend is married and happy and gets to go on vacations and live in a huge house and drive, an EV vehicle. So her life's great, and the not-so-hot friends' lives are subpar. So I don't want you to get in this situation. And this is an epidemic in America. I can't speak for other countries, but in America, this is an epidemic where because I do stand up every week, number of times a week, and almost every time I go out and I'm at a bar or I'm at a club doing stand up, I will see several of these groups where there'll be one girlfriend who looks super hot, right? She's Barbie, she's all dolled up, and the other friend looks like she's a Fraggle Rock with diabetes. She's super fat, unfit, just a grotesque face. And this is what happens. Like, the hot chick, she gets all the attention. The ugly one gets no attention. And it's like, why are you, if you're really friends with the unlovable Fraggle Rock, why would you put her in this situation where you know she, at the very best, she's going to be second pickings? And nobody wants to be second choice. In your case, you're barely even a choice at all because you're unlovable. But this is an epidemic. There are way too many hot babes, baddies, who insist on having an unlovable Fraggle Rock with diabetes, overweight friend, and they will go out together. So this is my solution for you. And I'm really rooting for you. Is you got to drop, first of all, this hot friend who's getting finger popped at this apartment, she is no longer your friend. You have to treat her like an ex, excommunicate her, block her on all social media, spread a nasty rumor in school that she has a new strand of gonorrhea that there is no cure for. And then when she comes at you and starts bitching in your face, make sure you have a hot pot of boiling water and throw it on her face. So that way her face, it gets ruined forever and it looks like it's melting off. So she'll finally feel what you feel. And what you feel is to be unlovable. And your girlfriend should have to feel that because he's been using and manipulating you up to this point till you spoke to the B-man here at Verbal Graffiti. So once you do that, you excommunicate your pretty friend, you got to go find girlfriends that are uglier and more unlovable than yourself. See, you got to learn from your pretty girlfriend and start playing her game. So you need to find a friend group where you're the prettiest of all three or four of you unlovable. So let's say you're all fat, overweight, not skinny, unlovable. But if you're the least fat of the foursome, when the Johns at the bar come up and chat you guys up, you're going to be the first picking. And if you don't like him, you can pass him off along to all your other fatty friends like your girlfriend is doing to you. So in your life, you need to realize that your friend who is soon to be finger popped in this apartment on a couch, she is your mortal enemy. She is your villain. She is the Riddler. She is, I don't really know anything about superheroes. Kryptonite, whatever it is, you got to drop her and you got to start playing life viciously. Because that's what you babes do. You are vicious. Your girlfriend is the most vicious among you. But there are plenty of your girlfriends out in this world. Like I said, we are in the middle of an epidemic where baddies are hanging out with fatties. And the fatties are blaming the guys, the Johns, for not wanting nothing to do with them. When it's really the baddie that they're friends with that is the actual the actual cause of all of your strife that you're having in your life. All right. Hopefully that makes sense. It does in my head. Sorry. Who the fuck am I? Who the fuck is a B-man? All I am is a W-2 employee. Why are you listening to anything I say? Let's go look at some photos. Remember, please share a segment or an episode of Verbal Graffiti with a record store employee if you happen to still know one. That last segment, speaking about Empire Records and Airheads and Radio 104, that nostalgic feeling, it reminds me of prior to the generation before me. I'm not talking about Gen X or Gen Z. I'm talking the people that were 5 or 6 years older than me. I missed the Dave Matthews Band DMB wave. I know who the band is, but there was a time, probably, I'd say, this is a speculation on my part, from 1994 through 1998, there were lots of Johns in high school and college, especially here on the East Coast of America. And then I was in college and high school like 2000 through 2007, 8. So again, I missed this by about 5 years, but I have older brothers and sisters, and I saw hints of this. I got vibes from it that there were a lot of Johns in high school, in college, in the 90s, who listened to Dave Matthews Band only to get pussy. That, they didn't like the music. They were not, they all on the Watchtower 41. They didn't give a fuck about the music. The only reason why they put a DMB sticker on the bumper sticker on the bumper of their whatever Dodge Ram van or whatever car they had, a beater car, they had a high school parking lot, a community college parking lot, was so that they could get some tail after class. That was a band. That was a signal that you are in touch with your emotions, that you cared about the environment, that you were thoughtful, that you were a deep thinker. You could spit some philosophy 101, and you used DMB, Dave Matthews Band, to get in the skirts of those college co-eds and slutty high school students in the 90s. And to all the guys who did that, a tip of my penis to you. Now, I don't have any proof of this, but my day, my coming of age, high school, college, I did not partake in the sexual activities, but I wasn't DMB for our age. For my high school and college, high school, not so much college, but high school, the band that you had to like, to get into a babe's skirt or a low cut, low rise, tight jeans from American Eagle, the band of choice was Incubus. If you were a listener of Incubus, it wasn't the music. You were listening to Incubus to get to the babe you wanted to get with. That was the avenue to get inside of that. You know, the whale tail? Remember the whale tail, the low-cut jeans with the thong hanging out of it? To get to the inside of that whale tail of that babe from geometry class, Incubus. That's the band you listened to in the early 2000s. Some people would argue Sugar Cult. That was more of an emo, hipster, wore platform shoes to school. The Sugar Cult might have been the band to do that. But for just the basic bitch, baddie before baddie was a thing, Incubus was the band. Yeah, it was DMB in the 90s, early 2000s. I believe it was Incubus. Some people, they'll argue, I'll hear the arguments. If you think there was a different band, hit me down in the comments. Again, I don't know shit about music. I know all the Beatles songs, but I can't sing the lyrics because I have a terrible memory and I don't know how to remember lyrics. It's another reason why I don't do karaoke, because you see me read these novels, I am horrendous at reading aloud. So having to not being able to retain lyrics and then have to read the lyrics as I'm reading them while drunk at karaoke, it's a train wreck. And it, Jewel is the song I do. Jewel is the singer I do when I have to do karaoke. But my heart is with the Cranberries. That, you know, looking back, that might be my favorite band of the 90s and 2000s, might be the Cranberries. And I say that only knowing maybe three or four of their songs. Again, those songs that were played on Radio 104 and sometimes get played on alternative rock music stations, unlike Limp Bizkit. So yeah, that's Cranberries, RIP to that lead singer. Don't know her name, even though it might be my favorite band from that time period. I think that's enough. That's enough. I had a little tangent about a drug dealer that I know that I'm very fond of, but we'll save that for another episode. That's what we call a tease in the business of verbal graffiti. To keep it moving along, found something on a subreddit, etiquette. All right. Saving chairs at the pool. I am at a resort in Mexico. Lots of people put towels, hats, etc. on the pool chairs in the morning to save them. My friend and I went out at around 9 a.m. and all the best spots were taken. We found chairs, but I really wanted an umbrella as I don't want a lot of direct sun and had my eye on the chairs I wanted. When an employee walked by, we asked about the chair saving policy. He said they didn't have a written policy, but they will move stuff if people haven't been back in an hour or two. The chairs I wanted did not have personal items in them other than a blue rubber band thingy that some people bring to secure their towels at the top of a chair. No hats or books or anything. So at 11 a.m., we got up and moved to those chairs. Just before noon, the couple shows up and says we are in their chairs. Whoa. I explained the hotel policy and said we waited 2 hours before taking them, and it has been now 3 hours. The husband didn't seem bothered and just took their rubber bands, but the wife, wanted us to move. By then, the pool was packed. I told her sorry, but no. Rules are rules. Saving chairs for 3 hours is rude. Should we have moved? Absolutely not. You should not have moved. You actually should have spit in that wife's face. Now, this is coming from the B-man. Now, the B-man, I am a goody two-shoe. I drive the speed limit. I obey all traffic laws. I walk on at the grocery store. I always put the cart back container thing in the parking lot. I put it there. I read all the directions before I put together furniture. I am a rule follower. Only got one detention in high school because and the reason why I got that detention is because I was doing my homework before the class started. Before the bell rang, I was I might be the only person in the history of high school to ever get a detention for doing homework. Whoa. You don't think I've lost some sleep over that? Mr. What was his name? I probably shouldn't say his name. We called him the X Factor, but yeah, X Factor. I still think about you. So I am a goody two-shoe. The rules were explained to you by the butlers, the servers at the all-inclusive resort. They said there's no policy. So I am on your side. So much so that like an incident like this, where you're arguing over a chair, prime real estate, in an all-inclusive resort, that the chair that has the umbrella by the pool, that is prime real estate. And the fact that this happened, and this happens a lot. This isn't a once per vacation occurrence. This is happening every morning at every all-inclusive resort in every island in the world and in all the galaxies that we don't even know about. There are these old bags, these old hag boomers. They get up at 5:30 a.m., crack of dawn. They go, they put their hat, they put their novel at the seat they want right at the pool, the prime real estate. Then they go back to bed, and then they come back 3 hours, 4 hours later at 10 a.m., well refreshed because they were able to go back to sleep, and they think they're so smart and witty and from the greatest generation, and they found a way to beat the system. Well, guess what? They met you and your husband and they got fucked. And I am here for it. Like, I'm so here for it that if I knew about this, if you had hit up the B-man and go, hey, someone tried taking a chair. They call us fiveies on chair and they're not here. I would have had your back. If this couple were to actually physically engage with you, I would have gotten a private jet. I would have went in debt to come down to Jamaica or the Bahamas and have your back and kick that lady in the vagina and toss her in the pool because that's what she deserves. That's what they all deserve. If I'm at an all-inclusive resort and I see that somebody put their chair, they put their book on a chair that they want. They called five. That should be illegal. That is against the rules. That is somebody who only cares about themselves. They have no empathy for their fellow vacationer. These are the worst kind of people. These are the cockroaches of society. I'm not for lynching, right? I'm not for lynching. But if there was a palm tree and a noose just happened to be there by the pool and you were to put the wife and the husband in the noose and they were to choke to death, I'd look the other way, right? I would look the other way and I'd lie for you under oath. That's how passionate, how angry that this makes me. This makes my blood boil. And to be man, I have great blood pressure. But that's how I would have just said, rules are rules. We waited 3 hours. First of all, you should not have waited 3 hours. You should have waited 1 hour max, and then you should have taken whatever that blue rubber thing, toss it in the pool, sit back on the chair, relax, and when they come, just lower your sunglasses and go, oh, what the fuck are you going to do about it, huh? Possessions, 9/10 of the law. But yeah, if I was at an all-inclusive resort, and I saw there was a babe who put a book on a chair as a fivesies. If she came back 3 hours later, after I've taken that chair, and then she tried to confront me and go, no, that's my seat, I would have said, no, absolutely not. You do not get fivesies for 3 hours at an all-inclusive resort at the chair by the pool. And if she tried to confront me more, absolutely. I'd kick her in the vagina, and I'd toss her by her hair into the pool. And I'd hope there wouldn't be a lifeguard. So if she drowns, she drowns. That's on her. She should die. Absolutely. So you're not just fighting this battle for yourself. You're fighting it for all of us. All of us who go to these all-inclusive resorts that do not have the funds to have the butler and the private cabana. We're in general population. That's what verbal graffiti is. We are all, we take the cheap cruises. Actually, we don't take cruises. We do the cheap vacations, the cheap liquor, and we're all, just all the people with terrible tattoos and muffin tops and saggy tits and C-sex and scars and bad acne. We're that type of person. We are you and you are we here at Verbal Graffiti. So we are on your side. A tip of my penis to you and your husband for standing your ground against this nasty couple. Now, the difference between you and the B-man is what happens after this altercation. So you held your ground. You got your chair with your umbrella by the pool. Good for you. All of us here, we're happy for you here at Verbal Graffiti. But the B-man, it would not end there. See, I am so spiteful that the rest of my time on that island, at that resort, my full intent would be to ruin that couple's vacation. Like, my joy from that 4 or 5 days at that all-inclusive resort would be making their lives miserable. I would go... anything they put, right? And their book on the chair in the pool, right? I'd find out what floor they're on in the hotel. Every night, I'm pulling the fire alarm. And when they're on the beach and they're going in the ocean, I'm sneaking up in the little novel that they have. I'm ripping a few pages out so they don't know what happens in the story. I'm finding some jellyfish. And when they're laying down on their stomach, I'm dropping the jellyfish on their back, right? When they leave all their bag, when they leave their bag by the pool, I'm peeing in it when they're not there. I'm asking the bartenders to underserve their drinks. When they're in the pool, I'm swimming by and I'm peeing so that my pee just kind of in onto their skin. I'm going into the kitchen and I'm paying off the cooks. I'm saying, hey, serve this couple that tries to save the umbrella seats for 3 hours by the pool. Serve them 3-day-old scallops that have not been refrigerated so that they get food sick. I'm doing everything in my power to make sure they get sick, make sure they get stung by a jellyfish, make sure they don't get the seat they want, make sure they lose sleep because of the fire alarm. I'm just making their life hell. All right, you're going to be in Jamaica, and you're going to take the seat with the umbrella, and you're going to deprive me of that. I'm turning your life into hell for the next 72 hours. And we'll see. And if we're on the same plane on the way back to America, yeah, I'm eye-fucking you with anger the entire ride home. So I'm happy for you. All of us here at Verbal Graffiti are happy for you, and we are on your side. And to anybody out there, right, who's trying to call fivesies at an all-inclusive resort, you can't do that. That is against the rules. There are no rules to call fivesies. Like, even the royal family can't do that. So fuck all you who are trying to do that. Let's continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. Where are we? All right. We're top of page 77. We will read 2 pages aloud. Hesitantly, Pamela bent down, fighting back a surge of revulsion, and kissed his feet. "I must do it," she screamed inwardly at her resisting mind. "I must." With deliberation, she kissed one foot, then the other, then began running her tongue over his toes, his arches, covering both the tops and bottoms of each extended foot, while Carlsberg stood over her, moaning with animal pleasure. "Suck my toes," he ordered. "Now." Pamela couldn't believe what he was asked. It seemed as like the most degrading act she had ever heard of. Surely this wouldn't be necessary. Surely. But at that moment, Carlsberg slapped her face with the back of his hand, and the stinging force of it made her fall back on the floor in shock and pain. "Ow!" she screamed, her cheek burning from the humiliating blow. "Do as I command you," he screamed, his nostrils flared. "Obey me." forcing back the tears, Pamela crawled to his feet and slowly sucked each and every toe. At first, she felt somewhat nauseous, but as her mouth worked over each of his extended digits, she began to sense a rising tide of lurid enjoyment. She began to enjoy the gross act that forced upon her, and again, the power of the drug Carlsberg had slipped in her wine earlier, removed her fear and inhibition until she began sucking on his toes with hunger eagerness. Suddenly, Carlsberg grabbed her by the hair, forced her face from his feet, and jerked her head up toward his to face him. "You do well, my little peasant. Very well. I am pleased." But how?" she whimpered, cringing in pain as he gripped her raven hair tightly. "You must partake in my essence," he said. "You must drink my essence to the very dregs. Then you will be one of us. Then you can be my slave wife as a woman." He let go of her hair, and with a cruel laugh, he undid the leather thong that held the chainmail pouch in place. Removing it, his mighty cock and ball swung free, and his penis grew immediately completely erect, now that it was no longer bound by the metal restraint. Carlsberg gripped his huge tool in his hand and leered down at Pamela, who was cowering before him. "This," he said, pulling back the velvety foreskin of his cock to reveal the huge bulbous head. "This is the source of my essence. You must drain me of my essence. My sweet one, drain me dry." At once, Pamela knew what he intended. He wanted her to suck his cock, something she had never done in her entire life. Go suck a fat one.